You're listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of January 8th, 2013. All views and opinions expressed on the Punk News Podcast are those of the person expressing the view or opinion and do not necessarily reflect those of punknews.org.
All right, folks, welcome to the Punk News Podcast Roundtable. Once again, my name is Adam White, recording in Niagara Falls, Ontario for you. Joining me on tonight's show, Mr. John Gentile out of Glen Mills, Pennsylvania.
Hey.
Where is Glen Mills?
Glen Mills, Pennsylvania is about 20 minutes outside of Philadelphia. Hello?
Yes. Anyways, I'll pick up where Adam left off. So, John's in Glen Mills, Pennsylvania, which is apparently 20 minutes outside of, outside of Philly. And my name's Chris Moran. I am in the jewel of the South, Richmond, Virginia. And we're going to talk about some shit for you.
I have no idea what the fuck happened.
Hey, you're back on and we're recording live and I finished the intro, so we're showing the folks how the sausage is made.
Yeah, well, this is the new style of podcast we're doing, right?
It's zany and crazy.
We just make sausage and drop calls in the middle and everything. And I have no idea what happened.
I'd like to call Adam out on a dirty lie. This podcast is not being recorded in Niagara Falls, Canada. It's being recorded in Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, that's made right. In America.
The South is rising again.
Can you get that on a sticker or something? And then like certain unions are allowed to listen to the show that wouldn't normally be.
I just love when people incorporate that phrase into like, you know, having like a boner basically. You know, like the South will rise again.
I'll say, speaking of unions, though, I think we should make that our target demographic for the podcast, because like union guys are like really loyal to stuff, so we should like try to get like, you know, steam pipe fitters union 418, and they'll like listen to every podcast.
Ooh!
And plus, we should make people disappear if they disagree with us.
I just want to I want a union sponsorship.
We'll get like the what do you guys call it? The UAW, is that what you call it?
Yeah,
the auto workers.
Yeah,
We call it the CAW, so I assume that yours is U or A. I don't know.
I just don't want to be affiliated with those fuckers who screwed up our Twinkie deal.
Didn't someone buy that?
Did they? I've been following it too much.
I just been sitting in my basement with a stock load of Twinkies and a shotgun. Anybody tries to get them, bam! Ain't touching my Twinkies.
I can so envision that, too.
Twinkies aren't that good. They really aren't. Like, still not that good.
But you know what is good? Have you guys heard the new Off With Their Head jam?
I have.
Have you heard it, Adam?
I have. And you know what? I mean, tied in with the new Off With Their Heads one, we had a new one from the Bronx as well. And both those songs kind of they said the same thing to me, which is, and I guess it's really no lie if you listen to these bands, but like these are both bands that they could totally, if they want to, be complete, you know, mass appeal rock bands. They don't often want to, but they have kind of the songwriting chops that they could do that if they want. And I don't know, both these songs kind of said that to me. It's like you listen to them and you go, you know what, there is a reason why Off With Their Heads, you know, is on Epitaph and, you know, appealed to Mr. Brett and all that. And there was a reason why the Bronx at one point had that weird deal with Island Records. And like both those guys can write like pretty, you know, pretty solid rock songs that you could see appeal to people like outside of the punk scene. So yeah, that's my thought.
Well, it's like, it's funny, Off With Their Heads, and I guess when you say Off With Their Heads, you think really of Ryan, the front man. They're, to me, he's always been like kind of like the anti-rock star, I guess, because that band could be and has all of the force behind it to be something massive, but it's almost like Ryan wants everything but that. It's weird. I don't think since they signed to Epitaph, I've seen them complete an entire set. I've seen them play probably three or four times since then. And, something goes wrong or Ryan gets pissed off and they just like end the set always. It's, Yeah, I don't know. It's always like you're always kind of anxious to see what's going to happen when they play a show.
Yeah, I agree with Adam. Is when I, like people are blown away by these tracks, and I think they're all right. But when I'm listening to them, I basically just hear like energetic, like mid '90s rock is what I hear. You know, that's a good thing, John. Well, I guess it shows a larger picture of, you know, people listen to punk rock for different reasons, and I think the people that are listening to this get what the band wants them to get out of it. But what these bands are doing, namely Off With Their Heads, and also what was the other band?
The Bronx.
I saw them live too. It's not what I'm looking for in punk rock. So the songs are fine, but not my thing, you know. By contrast, check like the new David Bowie jam. People were kind of hating on it, but I was loving it because it's like it's basically a kind of weird sounds with Bowie doing weird lyrics, and to me, it sounds like it could fit on like side B of Hunky Dory. Bowie's album from 71, I think, which was like his first big album. Listening to it, like I thought like that like he sounds kind of old on it. Well, I don't want to say why he sounds old, but like I mean he's only 66, but he sounds older than 66. But maybe just how they recorded it or how he chose to sing it. The point being is he sounds a little old, but the jam itself I think is pretty solid, although I think the album might be kind of mediocre because usually you want your leadoff track to really be a showstopper. Whereas this is more like a second song or a third song that's like mid-Bowie ballad, if you will, you know.
I found it pretty sleepy to me. And that's – which is nothing about the quality of the song. It's just that like, you know, in the middle of my like screaming baby kitchen when I was trying to listen to the music for today's podcast, I'm like, this one is just not going to happen without being paused six times. So it got lost a little bit. I think it's been weird to see the internet and I guess like the media in general kind of go bonkers about this today.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, Adam, let me give a history lesson real quick because maybe not a lot of our listeners are Bowie fans. Is from about 1968 till about 1980, Bowie put out like one album a year, about sometimes two albums a year because of his contractual duties. And also that's when he really got hooked on cocaine, was around 77, 76. No, I'm serious. Like he recorded the album Station to Station because he had no time to sleep. So he did it on cocaine. I think it's his best album. He has no recollection of it. Then in the 80s and up through the 90s, he did about one album every 2 to 3 years. Then all of a sudden in 2002, he did a tour, then just stopped. And it turned out he had a heart attack not too long after that. But for the last 10 years, he hasn't done any live shows. And he hasn't put out any albums, which is very unusual for him because he used to do about an album every 1 to 2 years and a tour about every 3 years. So, I mean, just so our listeners know, I mean, people are saying, well, it's just like Bowie doing an old song, but it's the first Bowie song in 10 years.
Yeah, and I guess that's it. But I just, you know, I've just seen, you know, I've seen lists cropping up like of Bowie stuff all day long. Like, it's like people are sitting on a whole bunch of content waiting for this, and it's like, haha, there's a Bowie song. We can now run our top 20 greatest Bowie jams ever article on our website. And these things have just been in the can somewhere. So I don't know. I'm interested to hear it. I know my knowledge of David Bowie really goes as far as the Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust, which I would listen to like religiously. Like, it's one of those things that I listen to, like, once a week. I'm in love with that record, and I always have been. But I know literally, like, nothing else aside from singles by him. Mainly because, and I get this, like what you said, it's one of those guys where, like, the size of his catalog is insane enough that I totally don't have the time to become well-schooled in Bowie. But one day when I have, you know, when I'm independently wealthy and I'm on an island doing nothing but listening to records, I will do that. I'm not there yet, though.
What a lot of people don't know, I sorry to keep jumping on this, but there's actually, like, Bowie's albums have been reissued a bunch of times. There's the original issues, the German editions, the Ryko editions, and I think the EMI editions. A lot of people say the Ryko, the German editions, rather, have the best sound. I've never heard them because they're like 70 or 80 bucks each used. But you can get the Ryko editions for like 10 to 12 bucks. And I highly recommend those because those come with some great bonus tracks that you can't get on the EMI editions. And also, a lot of people think the EMI editions are overproduced, like poor compression, and I agree.
Meh.
Meh?
M-E-H. Meh. Ooh. Now, I always, it's fun, I love listening to John because, John, it's almost like Something fucked up happened in the time-space continuum, and you were born way too late.
Tell me about it.
Like, you were supposed to have been born, like, I don't know, I would say, like, maybe mid-70s.
So yeah, but I might have been a tool bag, though, to tell you the truth.
I don't know. It's you're even more down on you're down, like, I'm down on, like, really, like, recent music, and you're down on, like, music that, like, is from my era because that's too new for you.
Well, it's true. You know, I wonder if I'm becoming too much of an old fogey. More and more new punk rock I hear, I'm like, this does nothing for me. So is it? See, to me, punk rock is the concept of, like, exposing you to new ideas both sonically and conceptually. So if I'm not into, like, the newer jams, have I stopped learning or growing, or is the new punk rock just weak?
See,
I don't know.
I've always viewed punk sort of as, like, I guess what made me gravitate towards it is I've always viewed punk as sort of like the roots of rock and roll, sort of like it's really, for the most part, like stripped down, very, very, very basic rock and roll. I mean, if you listen to, you know, like Chuck Berry, or if you listen to, you know, early Little Richard, you're going to hear some really, really, like, it's very comparable. If you were to speed it up and add in some oise and some call and response, that you would have basically punk music. I don't know. It's never really been about ideals for me. It's more about just kind of like, it's taking away a lot of the frills that, you know, alternative or modern rock or whatever the fuck you want to call it kind of brought to the table.
It's, I mean, that's the constant kind of back and forth on this with people. And I think that's, it's funny because I was thinking about that a lot this week because I've got this, apparently amongst the punk news staff, very coveted early release promo thing of the new Bad Religion record, which I'm really trying to analyze critically, and I'm having a hard time because, you know, they're one of those bands that I grew up with, and they're one of my, you know, I've consumed everything that they've ever released, and I'm listening to it, and I'm trying to figure out, like, do I criticize this because it sounds like a Bad Religion record and it's not stretching beyond that, or is this awesome because it sounds like a Bad Religion record? And part of me wants to say, well, it's kind of like, you know, if you go to get a pizza, you know, you like pizza, you want a pizza. You don't necessarily want a pizza that's going to fucking challenge you. You want pizza. And on the one hand, I think that, you know, I get that feeling from it. And on the other hand, I think, well, that's a fucking cop-out that I have that opinion. But I don't know. I go back and forth on it to the point where then I realize that when I try to actually analyze why punk is X or Y, I get really boring and stupid about it. So, yeah, I don't know. Do people want to hear us talk about what punk is?
I didn't, you know, it just made me think of something, though. I didn't realize that thing was coveted. I got that from the press doohickey, like, 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, well, Brian Yancey's just beating down the doors of Epitaph, and they're ignoring him.
Really?
Yeah.
Well.
It's funny, because I don't get promos anymore, because I stopped trying to get promos a long time ago, because I it was just blowing up my mailbox with garbage. And that came, which is kind of cool because nothing ever comes, really. So yeah, if it's something I actually want that comes, that's nice. So some angel at Epitaph is looking out for my interests, I guess. So yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
Speaking of what, you know, what is punk? Here's a question. Vans Warped Tour 13 has just been announced. Well, it's not just been announced. They've announced some more acts. You know, there's the new bands that have been announced, of MC Lars, who people know about. The Chariot, which has some, like, respect, but also some other bands I've never heard of. While She Sleeps, All Star Weekend, Rigor Lagerden,
yeah,
which is RDG, LDG, RS.
Is it red, gold, green, or some shit?
Oh, yeah, that's what it is. You're right. I'm an idiot. So anyways, I mean, do you guys care about Warped Tour 13? Does Warped have, like, do people go to Warped Tour anymore? Does it have a purpose?
I've been dreading this segue because I knew we were leading up to it.
I'm pretty pumped for Rigor Lagerden.
People still go to Warped Tour. I mean, it's a fucking cash cow. I mean, of course they do.
But now, I mean, it's still jammed. It really is.
I would assume so. I mean,
but I mean, like, the last few Ozfests were not jammed.
Well, but see, here's the thing, though. With Ozfest, it's kind of like, that's a very, like, niche age group, if you think about it, because,
oh, Ozfest?
Yeah, I think it is. And also those tickets are much more expensive than Warped. Warped is like, with bands in this genre, they can easily sort of adapt each year to whatever's hip. I mean, like, think about it. 5-6 years ago, what, Yellow Card was like the big shit? And look at it now, but it can easily morph and adapt, and you know, as opposed, and it's cheap to get these bands promotion and get them popular. Whereas Ozfest, those types of bands, it's, you know, they're there's a lot of marketing.
Dying. All the Ozfest bands and the people that listen to them, they're all dying. They're gonna die. They're old.
I like how Adam White just jumps in to remind everybody of the talent. Like, hey man, so what'd you think of the new Man Overboard record? Yeah. And Adam's everyone like, dies. Everyone yeah. will die.
Adam the Reaper White.
No, Chris is totally right about this, though. I mean, you know, they're shifting the kinds of bands that are on this to be the kinds of bands that kids will actually pay to go see. So I guess the Warped Tour is always full of people. In the same way that like the sixth grade class at school is always full of sixth graders, but you know. 10 years later, it's still going to be full of sixth graders, but you probably don't care what's going on because you are no longer a sixth grader. So, I don't know. Like, does that sound too condescending? It sounds really condescending when I say that.
You sound like a perv talking about sixth graders.
Oh, I wasn't thinking the perv angle on this, but there you go. But I don't know. Like, on the one hand, I look at this list of bands, and I'm sure most of them are horrible. And then I think, you know, well, maybe most of the bands that were playing when I went to see Warped Tour were horrible. You know, like maybe when I was standing there watching fucking Tiger Army, who I'm sure are horrible if you really think about it, but I was enjoying myself, there was some older person going, this looks horrible. So I don't know. I don't want to go too overboard on the hate on this, but...
Just ask John Gentile. He's going to hate on all the bands that we liked on Warped Tour.
I think Circle Jerks were on tour 1 year. I'm now Circle Jerks.
I think the Melvins were there once.
Really? Wow.
I don't know.
Let's see.
Actually, yeah, if they threw the Melvins in the midst of this sea of bands for 12-year-olds, yeah.
I'd be standing there between Regurgling and Mac Lethal to see the Melvins, man, for
dude,
sure.
We got to get the Melvins on just so John Gentile can go be our correspondent there for a day. The deal is you'd have to watch at least 10 other bands.
I would do it. For the Melvins, I would do it.
He would just stand there like, they're not as good as the Melvins.
Yeah, right. Every review was like, well, they're not the Melvins, that's for sure.
Because you know what I love about John? John is like not like a negative person. He's like, every time you like put something down, you like put it in a very positive way. And you would just be standing there like, eh, not the Melvins.
There's room for improvement. They've got a good start. There's room for improvement.
Yeah, I see you with like a little pad of paper in your hand and like a band plays and you just write down like not Melvins and then you back up to what you're
doing. Check.
Would you go wearing a Melvin shirt?
No, I would wear like an old-timey press uniform and like a hat that says like press on it, you know? And I'd be like, Returgling, you're on Warped Tour. How's it going? They're like, it's going well, man. I'm like, are you the Melvins? They're like, no. And I'm like, not the Melvins. Check.
Well, you know what? Speaking of not the Melvins, we'll play a song right now to break up some of
the. Is it the Melvins?
It's not, but that's keeping in with this not the Melvins. It's not Regurgligurk. No. Okay. This is a song from Edmonton, Alberta's Old Wives. It's from a digital EP that they released this past December that had a very Descendants influenced. Not influenced. What am I saying here? Tribute, let's say tribute art that was very Descendant style, and it kind of fits the sound of the band. They have like a very you know, like a Lookout era Screeching Weasel, Queers, Teen Idols thing going on. So this is, the band is Old Wives. The song is Sucks to Grow Up, which of course sounds like, you know, half the song titles that the Descendants have ever made. So yeah, this is from them. It comes courtesy of When's Lunch Records and Andy over at When's Lunch, who's been dutifully sending me songs for the podcast that I never play because I'm lazy. So here you go. This is one of those.
Tiger Army Never Die.
When we met, I was a toy, now we were.
suppose we should talk about things that also happened this week, because that's what people come to expect from us. Although they could just look it up on the internet. Bleeding through. They're a California metal act, the kind of band that is written about on Blabbermouth, I guess. We talk about them too for some reason. I'm not really sure. Vocalist of the band, Brendan. Oh God.
I'll tell you, it's Schiappotti. Schiappotti. Schiappotti.
Fuck, man, I'm Italian and I can't read that. Schiappotti? Let's go with
maybe it's Schiappotti.
Schiappotti, yeah.
Brendan Shippy. to Blabbermouth that. He said, "We have been a band since 1999, and many of us have just had life catch up with us in the way of marriages, kids, businesses, and other endeavors. We can no longer dedicate what we need to keeping Bleeding Through going. Personally, I feel doing this band in a part-time fashion is not what the band is all about, and we feel like we have always been an all-or-nothing band. With that said, and because we have established a worldwide following over the last 14 years, we want to give us and those people one more chance to share the music together. We're setting up farewell tours. Dates will be posted soon." So yeah, the band released seven full lengths when they were together, the final being last year's The Great Fire. So does anyone on said show that we are on know anything about Bleeding Cool? Bleeding Through or whatever.
I think I like – there was a song on that record, I just looked it up. This Is Love, This Is Murderous. It was like the first song on there. I think I liked it. I was trying to like listen to it in iTunes to see if I could remember, but the preview wouldn't load because I obviously don't have the record. I think it started out where the dude's like, "This is my life," and it had like just like a really like bro-y kind of like guitar riff. But it was, you know, it was you could tap your foot to it.
Actually, I just showed that none of us really did our research because they've got four whole reviews on Punk News. Like somebody's
no,
like,
they were big at one time.
Oh, you know this band?
I've seen their name, and I had a promo for that record. It was, you know, it wasn't good, but they were big at one time.
Auburn likes them. He gave them a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, you can't trust Auburn.
Oh, I love that our readers still post sandwiches under bands like this.
John, do you know what started the sandwich meme?
Yeah, I do. But actually, I'm going to pause this for 1 second. Their first album called This – no, not the first album. One of their albums is called This Is Love, This Is Murderous, has a picture of a knife through a heart.
That's what I was just talking about.
It's a blatant ripoff of Napalm Death and Coalesce. We have a split EP from 1999 with that exact imagery. Bam.
Leave it to John to either bring in – Bam. Mind, Thrash, or Melvins.
So anyway, what'd you ask me? Do I like hearts with knives or something?
No, I just said leave it to you to like always incorporate the Melvins or Thrash or Grind.
Wait, somebody asked me a question though, and I ignored it for my own narcissistic rant.
Adam?
Did I ask the question? Shit, I don't know.
Are you hearing voices, John?
Probably.
He's hearing the Melvins in his head.
Yeah. Buzz Osborne told me to skin you alive. That's
because they had the cover art of the guy with no bottom jaw. Okay.
I'm trying to remember if this is the same band that had that dude with the really cheesy mohawk at one point.
That's the Casualties. All of them.
Band on Trustkill at some point have a record with a guy with no bottom jaw on the front cover, though. Wasn't that like a thing?
I don't know, but speaking of the Casualties, I just want to say to any of our longtime readers or listeners, if you ever run into to our old reviews editor Brian Schultz, you have to ask him about his Casualties story, and that's all I'm gonna say. Adam knows what I'm talking about. Punk rock bowling.
Say.
Just ask him about cereal with the Casualties. Anyways, so yeah, so Bleeding Through broke up. If you're bummed, well, they've got shit you can listen to.
They put out 7 albums in 14 years. That's pretty good. You know, I mean, some bands put out 2 albums in 14 years.
How many did the Melvins put out in 14 years?
Oh, honestly, like 25. Like, seriously. But I mean, we can't hold people to the Melvins. I mean, come on, it's the Melvins.
Touche.
Well, okay. So I guess speaking of people that haven't put out things, at that frequency, the Replacements. So we keep getting kind of details on this weird charity EP thing that they're releasing. So this is it is an extremely limited edition Replacements set of four songs that they are put together to raise money for their guitarist Slim Dunlop, who had a stroke in early 2012. So the maths on this record, it's Paul and Tommy, and I'm not really sure who else is in the band. Those are the main guys that are going to be in this. They weren't able to get everyone back together for it. But yeah, so there are details on this now. So there's a Slim Dunlop song called Bust It Up that's on it. There's a cover of Hank Williams' Lost Highway. There is a version of Everything's Coming Up Roses from Gypsy, a musical fable. And there is a cover of Gordon Lightfoot's I'm Not Sayin'. So this thing is being, you know, limited 250 copies. It's being auctioned off to the highest bidder, and then, you know, eventually a digital thing will be available for it. You know, is there interest in this on you guys?
Yes. I love the Replacements. I'm going to cut you off right there because yes, I fucking love the Replacements. And I've only was able to see Paul Westberg live. I never saw the Replacements live. So I'm just begging, you know, I think Slim could use some more money. So how about a tour to like benefit him, you know?
How could they not convince Chris Mars to actually drum on this?
There was a story about it, and I forgot what it was. I read it somewhere. Maybe it was a rumor I read. I don't know. My mind's kind of cheesy at this point. But, yeah, I don't know. But I really don't care. It's new Replacements. I don't care. If it was just Paul and there was, you know, and Tommy wasn't involved, which I love Tommy, but if it was just Paul, I'd still be really fucking interested. I mean, everything. I just love everything about the Replacements, even – If anybody who doesn't know how the Replacements started, go read it. It's a very fascinating story.
So hold on, John. The Replacements at least sort of fall into more of your the era in which your brain seems to live. You had any opinions there, or were they not, you know, or were you listening to like?
I actually don't mind the Replacements, but I'm not like a fan, and I actually. I kind of think the Replacements are kind of where me and punk rock start to diverge, to tell you the truth. Because the Replacements, a lot of the music is calm, reflective. And I like calm, reflective music, but I don't go to punk rock when I want calm, reflective music. You know, I go to punk rock when I want explosive, bombastic, vitrolic, that kind, like, you know, just wild music. And Replacements are too calm. So if I'm like in a punk rock mood, like I'm not going to listen to the Replacements. If I want something that's more reflective, I want something that's more extreme than the Replacements. So really, like, Replacements' first album's like, what, 83, 82? Something like that?
That's Tim, like, yeah, Tim came out, I think, in 80... I want to say 83, maybe?
Yeah, that's kind of where we start to split, to tell you the truth. What also I think is interesting is they're only going to make 250 copies and auction them off to help with the medical bills, right? For... Slim Dunlap, which is fantastic. I mean, that's great. I'm all for that. But I guess on a semi-related note, I think we're going to see more of this. And honestly, I think it's the illegal downloader's fault. And it's basically the physical product will become more and more bourgeoisie. Because basically, since you can legally download things, bands will just give away downloads for free or sell them, you know, for 10 or even 15 bucks. Whereas if you really want the physical copy, you're going to have to pay like way more than it's actually worth, if you will, just because they can't afford to make them unless they charge 50, 60, 70 bucks for a physical record, which I think is lame. And I don't want to be throwing out 80 bucks for a record, but I don't want the digital. I want the physical. So, I mean, that's just what I think is going to happen in the future. I think more and more bands are going to make physical products a real premium and then basically make digital the main way they get out. Well, everybody knows that digital is going to be the main way people get out music, but I think every physical release will now be a quote-unquote collector's item that's 60 or 100 or 150 bucks as opposed to 15, you know, or 10. So speaking of apocalypses, I got a track for you guys. There's this band called Abolitionist, who I've been following pretty much since their inception. They kind of started out as like a sort of like a Jawbreaker ripoff band, and I'm not a Jawbreaker fan, really. But they kind of evolved and got harder and they sort of developed like a Spitz or maybe like a NOFX kind of influence. But they just put out their new EP. It's a digital EP, which has no physical version, called Bleeding Kansas. And it's like it's a pretty clever EP because like it focuses on like I guess an apocalypse or the collapse of social and political systems in Kansas, and people like just go resort to cannibalism. At least that's how I read it. So anyway, this is a pretty cool track off their Bleeding Kansas EP. The band is called Abolitionist, and this is Potawatomi.
We were just talking about vinyl before that last song, so I guess we got to talk about this NOFX 30 years box set thing that's coming out. So Epitaph and Fat are teaming up for it, which by the way makes like there's a part of me that is a 16 year old and it is stoked to hear that. Anyways, Epitaph and Fat, they're teaming up to co-release a new LP box set in celebration of NOFX's 30th anniversary. The thing is due out on the 19th of February. It costs $1 shy of $200. And it will include everything up to the recent one that came out self-entitled. So it goes basically everything all the way back to Liberal Animation. You know, there's probably stuff that you want in there. And there's probably stuff you don't want in there, Coaster. So that's that. I that was just a bad joke. I didn't really care that much about Coaster one way or the other. But anyways, so along with all the studio stuff that's in it, there is going to be a double LP that is in there with the entirety of their 7 Inch of the Month Club releases and The Decline on it. So there is a lot of stuff. And this is all coming in a hardbound box. All the albums will be pressed on colored vinyl, different colors for the Fat and Epitaph editions of the set. And yeah, there's that thing's coming out. It's you know, similar, I guess, to the thing that Bad Religion did for their
anniversary. I think it's hilarious. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah. I'm just explaining.
I think it's hilarious that this, like, is evidence directly against what I just said, like, 4 minutes ago, where I was like, vinyl's going to be $50 each, $100 each, and then they're selling, like, 15 records for $200, which I think is a pretty fair deal, I got to say. I'm not even a NoFX fan, but I was plenty tempted to pick this up just because it's a pretty cool set, you know? This is a way to do this kind of thing. I think this is way better than the Rancid box that they just put out. I don't know if you punk news fans know, but Rancid just re-released their first 6 albums, I guess, or 7 albums.
It came with a bat.
Yeah, I was going to say, I just want the little bat.
Yeah, it came with a bat, but it was all their albums on 7-inch records. Like, what's the point of that? You got to, like, flip it over, like, every 2 minutes. It's like designed not to be listened to. It's like, here is the most, like inconvenient way to listen to music ever. Here's, like, 240 records or whatever it was. It's a joke. You know, whereas this is the way it's like, here's all our jams, you know, nice thick pressings, you know, nice jackets, all the jams, a little bit of rare stuff, $200. Here you go. That's the deal. This is the way to put out your music, folks.
I'm going to get this, and I'll tell you a couple reasons why.
You get the special limited edition one?
Yeah, I'm going to get something. I don't know. But here's the thing, though. Like, yes, Coaster was terrible, but I have this weird, like, I guess you could say sort of like allegiance to NoFX, if you will, because they've been doing kind of like the type of music that I like, which is that of a 16-year-old adolescent, for so long and have stayed more or less so true to it that, you know, it's almost like they're doing this and I feel like I got to be a part of it. Not to mention, I just love the fact that in the press release for this, like, for those of you who haven't seen the article, there's a picture of it, but it comes with what they put in their press release as their giant onstage banner, which if any of you guys know what they typically have as their banner is this tiny little orange NoFX flag, and they're including one. So that, I think it's kind of funny. That's just, it's like another like thing I love about the band is just that stupid sense of humor. And yeah, I'm definitely gonna get this.
You know, NoFX fans kind of go kind of crazy on eBay. The first few copies I think were signed by the band or came to something special. Do you think, like, what do you think, like, the rare version this will go for on eBay? Do you think it'll go for like $1,000?
Yeah, there's some Argentinian that'll pay $1,000. Sure.
Yeah, I knew I should have bought one, like a PlayStation 3 or 4 or whatever, just to like flip it, make some cash.
Okay. Aside from whatever you guys are talking about, I really need to know now, is the bat that came with the stupid Rancid box set a full-size bat?
Or no, it's like a mini bat.
Aw.
It's the best kind of bat.
That makes it better, dude.
Rather somebody beating them down.
Yeah, that makes it better. What are you talking about?
Well, hold on, what do you mean by mini bat? Because I'm picturing, okay, like, novelty bat.
See, in America, let me tell you about what we do here.
Adam, that whole band's career is a novelty.
No, Adam, see, here's the thing. In America, like at most like minor league ballparks, and maybe some of the big leagues do it too, I don't know, but typically at minor league ballparks in like the souvenir shops, whatever, they sell these little miniature bats. And it's like, I'd say they're probably about maybe a foot and a half long. Yeah, and they're typically used by hooligans for beating the shit out of people. If you ever watch the episode, there's an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where they beat up a bum with a mini bat.
Huh. I thought, okay, A, that's really interesting. B, well, I guess it plays into Rancid's whole shtick if it's something that hooligans use to beat people up.
Yeah, why did it come with a bat? Like, is that what's for beating people up? Like, why do you get a Rancid bat?
Yeah, that's kind of like, it's like a, I don't know, maybe they probably thought it was cool. Maybe they're not thugs, but that's typically what those are for. People carry them to beat the shit out of people.
Well, I mean, on Life Won't Wait, there was a song by Rancid called Warsaw that is basically about beating someone down with a baseball bat at some point. So I guess that could be why. I don't know. That makes me sad. I get that why it's a thing and it's a real thing, but I was really hoping that you would get this box set of 7 inches and a fucking full-sized regulation baseball bat. But
how do we know it's not full-size? Because it's an official Rancid Louisville Slugger.
I'm telling you, it's a mini bat.
Is it? Yeah.
And I could be wrong, but I could have swore I saw it was a mini bat.
You know, yeah. I mean, instead of, you know, including a bat, they could have included, you know, rare tracks or something to actually make it the essentials, you know?
Well, no one knows facts. Their box sets might just have, like, random pills in the... Do you remember when he was doing that?
No, but I'll tell you where he got the idea from that. Well, I don't know if he got the idea from that. But this is crazy. Big Black, Steve Albini with Big Black, he used to put, like, random stuff in the 7 inches. So, like, if you have, like, they were putting, like, flesh, like blotters of blood, LSD tabs, and even razor blades. And you would, like, get that in, like, the first Big Black 7-inch. But they stopped doing that when they actually got distributed by, like, a real label.
No, what I was referring to was there was a while, and it was, like, I want to say it was, like, a couple months, where Fat Mike was on Twitter recently, and wherever he was, he would kind of go onto Twitter and be like, hey, if you're in the Denver airport, go look under the potted plant on the third floor or something. And you really got the impression he was just, like, wandering around leaving drugs everywhere. And in a way that, like, I mean, I don't really know how laws work. You do, John. But at some point, that might be something that could get you in trouble.
Would get you in trouble. Well, I mean, we certainly don't know that Fat Mike was leaving drugs around, do we? However, if someone was leaving drugs around, you would absolutely get in trouble for that, you know, like that. Like if you say, I left something here and it turned out to be drugs, that's distribution of drugs. I mean, you can go to jail for real time for doing that, you know?
I may have totally been misleading or misreading his stuff, but you kind of got the idea that's what he was doing.
Yeah. What if you like went to check it out and it was like drugs and like the cops like right behind you, man.
I think it's like a cold drop.
Some rock star told me it was here.
Oh man. Yeah, I don't know. If anyone at Fat or Epitaph wants to send me personally both the NoFX box set and the Bad Religion one that came out that you still haven't sent me, I will totally appreciate it.
If Rancid sends me the Rancid bat, I promise to beat down people that are talking trash on my family and talking trash on my bros.
I'm gonna put it out there, but at this point. After all of my research while you guys rambled, I think it may very well be a full-size bat.
That's right.
But it would make more sense to be a mini bat because those are used by droogs for loads of ultraviolence. And Adam, I am sending you a link so you can see what a mini bat looks like. So there you go.
Oh, this is interesting, though. Dope Sick Girl was not on Ranted 2000, was it? Like, that was the B-side, right?
Dope Sick Girl? No, it was on,
It was a B-side, because I have it. Yeah, I have, like, a single. It's like a European single thing.
It's on the new, that's cool, they put that in the releases, which it's cool they did that, they threw in the B-sides. Oh, maybe that is from the B-sides.
Dope Sick Girl was on, Dope Sick Girl was on Let's Go, so what are we thinking? Yeah, I think it was.
I'll look this up then, because I've got a pretty cool Ranted single.
It wasn't a B-side.
Like, what's on the Sick Sick World single, then? I'll look it up. You guys talk about beating people down with baseball bats.
I know what you're talking about, too. It's going to drive me crazy. It's going to drive me crazy. Because I own it. There was a time when Rancid 2000 came out, I was actually, like, quite religiously buying everything that band released.
No, I guess I'm dumb.
Singles, and it's driving me crazy now.
The 12-inch that I'm talking about is Young Al Capone, which is my favorite Rancid song, and Antennas and Sick Sick World. So I don't know why I thought Dope Sick Girl was on that. Maybe there's a single with Dope Sick Girl on it, but it's like a different version or something.
Anyways, yeah. So yeah, you know what? The Rancid's 2000 record is kind of where everything peaked for me, and then after that, yeah.
Hey, the bat's still available, by the way.
Wouldn't that make it such a pain in the ass to ship? Like, now you're not just shipping a box. You're shipping, like, a box and a tube and, you know.
Well, here's your answer. Dope Sick Girl was a B-side on Radio, Radio, Radio.
What?
Yes. Well, there's four songs on that, and they're all different versions than are on the LP version. That's what I was thinking of.
Maybe I have that 7-inch, then.
Yeah, everybody. Like, that's the first Ranted 7-inch everybody gets.
Oh, okay. Mm. Well, how about that? John Gentile, yeah. Punk rock historian. Anyways. All right. Speaking of tattoos.
What?
Yeah.
Well, you see, Lars Fredriksson owns some tattoo parlors, who was in Rancid, and now we're going to talk about tattoos.
Yeah, there are three of them that are solely devoted to his neck.
And then he has the one. I think him and Kira have like the same tattoo. Don't they both have beer tattoos on their lips? I think Kira has a tattoo inside of her gums, doesn't she?
Yeah, no, she's got one that says ECFU.
The Souls thing. But yeah, that's what something Kira and Lars Fredriksson share something in common.
Ooh,
how crazy is that?
So anyway, speaking of tattoos.
I'll talk about it then. Yeah, there's a festival happening out in California. It's going to be taking place March 8th through the 10th in Costa Mesa, to be specific. So, I don't know, maybe you'll see Mr. Richard Verducci there if you go out, watch for him. But yeah, it's Muse Inc. is what the name of the festival is.
I don't get it.
It's music and ink, John. You know, ink like the tattoos and music. Ew. Like Muse Inc. It's a made-up compound word.
You know what my website is? MusicInInc.com. Bam.
Is it really?
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. How about that? Now you're gonna get denial of service bombs from all.
No, I got them beat. I should sue them.
You should.
I got them beat by about 5 years.
Well, let me tell you guys who's playing this fucking thing. So you got kicking off the weekend, Friday, March 8th. You got Bad Religion with the Vandals and Guttermouth. Wow, I didn't know Guttermouth was still around. Holy shit. Then you got on Saturday what they're billing as the Pennywise reunion.
Re-hyphen union.
Yeah, whatever. because it's the rejoining of, you know, basically Jim Lindbergh, because Zoli got fucked up or something. I don't know. He got hurt. So Jim Lindbergh is coming back to once again grace you with his hat-wearing presence. Yeah, and they'll be playing that night with Lagwagon and... Ooh, John Gentile, TSOL is playing. I'm sure you're stoked about that.
I like TSOL, but I really like Headcat is playing. That's Lemmy from Motorhead. That's kind of like his rockabilly band. And I actually could have saw him once, and I didn't, and I regret it. And it's just like Lemmy and like two of his pals just like kicking out like rockabilly, like actual rockabilly, not like gothabilly or deathabilly or, you know, like crappy people with crappy tattoos, like actual rockabilly. And like their own rockabilly type tunes, and it's pretty cool. I'm kind of bummed out just so far down on the poster. Like I said, I guess people don't care about Lemmy
anymore.
Dude,
John, you got to look at the dates, bro. They're playing on Sunday. That's why they're at the bottom, because it's going in order.
Yeah, but their logo is so small.
But they're not bigger. They're not bigger than Lucero or the Reverend Horton Heat.
You tell me Lemmy's not bigger than Lucero?
If it was Motorhead, the top of the thing would say Motorhead.
His font is literally smaller than Johnny Two Bags. I have no idea who Johnny Two Bags
is. Johnny Two Bags is in Social D, dude.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Well.
Good guitarist, man. He is.
You know who else is a good bassist? Lemmy from Motorhead, that too.
Yeah, so... There you go. On Sunday, the Rev is playing with Lucero, the Headcat, and Johnny Two Bags. So lots of dudes like that are dressed like Brian Fallon will be in attendance.
Yeah.
Except Brian doesn't wear those goofy loafer type shoes. I call them elevated loafers because you guys know what I'm talking about, the ones that look like loafers, but they're like platform loafers with like usually have like cheetah skin or some shit on them.
They're actually called platform shoes. What they're called?
Whatever. They look like crap.
Not if it's like the 70s and you're in like Club 54, Studio 54. You know, like disco's playing, then you look awesome. But
these are the ones all the greasers wear. Are we talking about the same thing?
We are, but you see, it's just like if you're in a disco, you paint them white and you look cool. But if you're a greaser, you paint them black and you look cool. You know, honestly, yeah. I'd rather hang out at a disco than like with a bunch of greasers. To tell you the truth.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be dudes there, like, with, like, you know, everyone will be either wearing, like, flannel or plaid shirts. They'll have white t-shirts rolled up.
Check this out. I've had this debate before. I want to know your guys' opinion. Like, in the punk rock subculture, there's, like, a greaser subculture, right? Where, like, punk rock guys dress up like the Fonz, basically, right?
Well, you got rockabilly, then you got psychobilly, and then you got...
Right, right. I mean, that's all the same thing, except for one of them likes Misfits and one of them doesn't.
Social D Billy, too.
But they dress up like greasers, right? Like guys that build their hot rods and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a subculture of punk, right? Or it's related to punk, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But my point is, in the 50s, weren't greasers like the jocks and the guys that beat up like the unusual, like the beatniks and like the people that weren't cool? Aren't they dressing up as a bunch of bros, basically?
Haven't you ever seen the like James Dean, dude? He wasn't like a jock or a bro.
He ain't a punk rocker though. James Dean is basically what the guy from Freaks and Geeks. What's his name?
You didn't have punk rock back then, though.
Yeah, you did. You got like, the beatniks, and you got like the nerdy guys.
Did you just say James Dean was the dude from Freaks and Geeks?
Yeah, no. What's his name? The good-looking guy from Freaks and Geeks. What's
his name? Adam. Is for Mr. Gentile. Inform him who James Dean is.
James Franco. He's basically who James Dean is, right? I mean, like he's a good-looking guy that a lot of girls like, and he's more arty than the other good-looking guys in movies. But James Dean is not a punk rocker, you know?
Dude, he died fucking in a car crash.
James Dean was banging Marilyn Monroe, right?
Yeah.
Well, who's the last punk rocker that was banging Scarlett Johansson? I mean, for real.
I'm sure somebody from like Good Charlotte tagged it.
Oh. Well, that's not punk rock. And I think I'm venturing into sexist territory, so I'm going to retreat.
Okay,
and talk about the Melvins.
I'll pull you out of sexist territory here.
Thanks.
So here's my problem with the whole greaser thing. Now, on the one hand, when I'm at a show and it's totally not a show that there should be greaser guys at, and there's a couple greaser guys there that go like full on like rockabilly, like they've got the fucking coif in their hair and everything, I can kind of respect that because I'm like, man, that is commitment to a bit. Like that dude wants to be wearing that costume, so all the power to him. Now, that said, I come from a family of hot rod people.
Really? I would never have guessed, like for real.
Yeah, like my dad and my brother run a garage. My dad has he's got a rebuilt 37 Ford rod. He built and still owns a 28 Chevy sports coupe. He built and sold a 31 Chevy special sedan.
Adam, so, I'm going to need you to quit doing your job right now and start a show with you, your dad, and your brother. And like your dad gets angry at the both of you when you like goof around, yeah, but then like you like agree to like see who can build the best hot rod.
Yeah. So anyways, they do that stuff. They build these rods. They go to shows. They hang out with other car people. And here's the thing. These hot rod people, they're my dad. They're not cool. James Deany greasers listening to like awesome music and whatever. They're guys with like paunches that go to shows to drink like, you know, Coors Light and listen to the fucking Eagles on the CD player. They're not.
You know, they always had that mix CD, you know, with like some like soul, like give me a little sign and stuff. I know what you're talking about.
They've got some, you know, there's some Pete Cetera that's going on. There's, you know, like Chicago, and Chicago really wasn't interesting. You know, they're dads and moms and stuff, the hot rod people these days. I'm sure there's like a subculture somewhere that tries to like make it really, really like, you know, cool and hip and greaser. And like, don't get me wrong, I love my parents and I think their car thing is incredibly cool. It's just, I don't know, every person I've ever met that's into the hot rodding culture is like someone's dad. It's not, you know, they're not.
Adam, I don't think most of those people like are really like into building cars. You realize this, right?
I know, but it's kind of like, you know, you're dressing like some sort of hot rod era person. That's the subculture that you think you're aping, but it's not. You know, I don't know. I see where you're going,
but you gotta put it into context, and that's the fact that these are guys who are just it's kind of like. I guess you could say not everyone who is wearing, like, you know, I don't know, flannel with a beard and all that is going to move to Gainesville.
No, that's cool. That's cool. I'm just saying that's why it's always seemed more like I'm not totally knocking the whole rockabilly thing. I'm just saying that's why to me it's always seemed more like it's a pastiche thing. It's one of these postmodern we're looking at. You know, we're looking at what happened in the past and we're kind of revisioning it in the kind of a cool way, but you know, it probably doesn't at all sync up with reality. And I guess because I've got enough reality with the hot rod scene that I cannot square those two things together. I'm like, you know, the guy with the big, huge coif in his hair, you know, all the power to you, dude, but you are not a hot rod guy to me.
All right, I'm calling it now. Adam is trying to be nice about this, but to any of you rockabilly dudes out there, Adam is basically telling you you are posers,
and you guys better run out and get the rancid bat and find Adam.
No, dude, they all carry switchblade combs.
I think I'll just want to be the Fonz, which actually is pretty noble because the Fonz is the man. I don't care what anybody says.
How can you support the Fonz, but you don't like James Dean?
I'll tell you what. I don't dislike James Dean. I just think he's a tool. With the Fonz, he helps Richie out of problems, kicks a jukebox, and gets all the chicks, man. Fonz is the man, and he's like 45.
James Dean didn't have time to do any of that. Didn't he die when he was like 23 or something?
Maybe if he was helping Richie out instead of drinking and driving, he would have got he would be still around and be a cool guy, you know?
All right, I'll give you that. And he was 24 when he died. I think he was 24. Yeah. I'm not doing the math right, but yeah, he was. Anyways,
none of our math has been right on this show at all. All of our units have been off. Yeah, that's just the kind of show this is, I think. So that's I guess that's the things that happened this week. So there you go. I'll play one more song before we wrap things up. So on the 20th of January, we're giving away tickets to a show in my local area here in St. Catharines, Ontario, where Fucked Up is coming down and they're playing, which to me is an incredibly small venue and a venue that you totally probably do not want Fucked Up to play in because the place is going to get wrecked. So I'm kind of excited about this. Not really because I really like that venue, but you know, it'll be interesting. So anyways, I'm not going to play a Fucked Up song, so too bad if I just got your hopes up there. I'm going to play a song by one of the bands that's opening for Fucked Up on that show. There's a band from Toronto called Moon King. They released an EP last year called Obsession One via One Big Silence. It's a label that's run by Fucked Up's Mike Halechuk. And the song is called Only Child. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty atmospheric. Lots of it times. And then there's some there's kind of some electronic stuff that's happening in it, and it's cool. There's like a good kind of mood thing that's happening in it. I think Pitchfork called it fucking dream pop at one point, but I don't even know what that means. So whatever.
Dream pop.
Yeah. So anyways, this is Only Child by Moon King. If you guys know Canadian music scene at all, Moon King features members of the band Spiral Beach, which used to be a pretty hip Toronto indie pop art band. So yeah, you got that. So anyways, this is Only Child by Moon King. They're opening for the Fucked Up show in St. Catharines. And if you want tickets to that show, you can go enter a contest. It's on Punk News right now. So yeah, do that. Here you go.
Oh,
right. That's going to do it again for the Punk News Podcast. Chris Moran here, joined by Adam White, John Gentile. We want to thank the bands that contributed some music to this week's show, including Abolitionist with the track Pattawamie, Moon King with the track Only Child, and Old Wives with the track Sucks to Grow Up. Again, you can always provide feedback to us at podcast@punknews.org. Hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, all of your general social media sites. We want to thank Nariman for editing this stupid podcast and making us not sound as much like idiots as we normally do. And we also want to thank Scotty from Death of False Hope for providing our theme music. Again, that's it for this week. We thank you and hope you come back and join us next week for the Punk News Podcast.